Hearty seasonal greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
World football's governing body, FIFA, released its final set of rankings for 2016 on Thursday. Argentina ends the year as the world's number one ranked team. Argentina won 10 of its 15 matches in 2016, losing three times and drawing twice. One of those losses came June 26th at MetLife Stadium near New York City, where Argentina lost to Chile 4-2 on penalty kicks in the final of the Copa America Centenario. To help celebrate that tournament's 100th anniversary, it was held for the first time outside South America here in the USA. Argentina's big rival, five-time world champion Brazil, ends 2016 at number two, followed by reigning world champion Germany at number three, and Chile at number four. Belgium is fifth, Colombia is sixth, and France is seventh. Portugal, which beat host France 1-0 in extra time in the final of this year's European Championship, ends the year at number eight in the world. Uruguay is number nine, and 2010 world champion Spain is number 10. The United States, which recently hired Bruce Arena for a second stint in charge of the national team, ends 2016 at number 28 in the world. Senegal at 33 is the highest-ranked African team, according to FIFA. The Senegalese are followed by Ivory Coast at 34, Tunisia at 35, and Egypt at 36. Algeria is 38th, and the Democratic Republic of Congo is 48th. Rounding out the top 10 African teams in FIFA's year-end rankings, we have Burkina Faso at 50, Nigeria at 51, Ghana at 53, and Morocco at 57. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Guinea-Bissau's national football team. Guinea-Bissau was the biggest African mover over the past year. They moved up 78 places from the December 2015 rankings and end 2016 at 68th overall. Guinea-Bissau had an excellent year, qualifying for their first ever Africa Cup of Nations tournament. That competition kicks off January 14th in Gabon. As we look back on some of the sports highlights from 2016, it proved to be a year of first-timers in football. Joining us now to talk about that is Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Welcome back to Studio 22, Dan, and sporty seasonal greetings.
Hi, Sonny. It's good to be back. I debated about wearing a sports-themed outfit today, but I stuck with something a little more conservative instead.
You look festive anyways, Dan, in your, I guess that's sort of violet purple. Well, we're talking about first-timers in football, Dan. Why don't we kick off at the club level? English Premier League, some first-time foxes made a name for themselves, didn't they?
So if you were an English Premier League soccer fan, you didn't have to spend too much money if you lived outside of London or Manchester over the last 20 years, because during that span, only teams from London or Manchester won the English Premier League title. The Foxes from Leicester City decided to change that trend this year, and they won the championship for the first time in the club's 132-year history. Before the season started, Leicester City was facing 5,000-1 odds for winning the championship. And I read a story the other day that put that into perspective. My hometown NFL team, the Cleveland Browns, before this season, of which they have not won a game yet, and there are only two games left in the 16-game season, they were about 240-1 odds. Leicester City was 5,000-1, and they managed to pull it off. It was really an exciting story to kind of kick off the sports year. I mean, we saw some of the teams and seasons that were mostly in 2015 coming to an end in the first part of 2016 with, for example, Peyton Manning winning the Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos and then retiring. The Leicester City Championship was really the first big club championship of the year. And it was a worldwide story because nobody expected such a big season from them.
The Foxes, of course, there was a sense that, at least for me, that they were going to drop eventually in the standings during their great run, but it didn't happen. And I think they caught a lot of football fans by surprise.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the fox and the hare and, you know, I mean, all these old stories. Which of these big behemoth teams that's lurking? You know, you have Arsenal, you have Liverpool, you have Chelsea, you have Manchester City, those kinds of teams that are always in the mix. Which one of them was going to go on a hot streak and catch the Foxes? And none of them could. The only thing that I think about the Premier League setup that's a little bit anticlimactic, if a team is ahead by a few games, by a few wins with only one or two games to go, they can win the championship not really on the field. So in this case, they were waiting for the results of a Tottenham game which I think finished in a tie, which gave them the championship. But it is exciting to see teams win it on the field. So maybe they can find a way to make a change like that in the future.
And again, this current English Premier League season, the Foxes maybe not performing up to their standards of last season. I think they're struggling to avoid relegation at this point, but still a great story in the English Premier League, the Foxes of Leicester City.
Yeah, and they weren't the first club level team to win a first time championship in the U.S. top level soccer league, the Major League Soccer. The Seattle Sounders, which has been a strong team. I mean, Seattle is one of the most supportive audiences in Major League Soccer, finally won their first championship in the MLS Cup a couple weeks ago in shootout penalty kicks against Toronto. And that game actually had one of the most exciting moments of the year in extra time. The well-known U.S. national team player Jozy Altidore went up for a header that looked like it was destined to go into the goal, and the Seattle goalie, Stefan Fry, leaped out of nowhere to save it and resulted in the game going to penalties and Seattle getting its first ever championship.
Yeah, the remarks after Fry made that spectacular save, you know, hands of God and from the heavens, and where did that come from? And even Altidore was impressed with that great save. Altidore, by the way, was named the male athlete of the year for 2016 by U.S. Soccer, so he got some props. The Seattle Sounders, as Dan mentioned, won their first Major League Soccer title. One of the young stars on the Sounders, Jordan Morris, talked about Seattle lifting the trophy for the first time.
It's amazing. Toronto, all credit to them, made it really tough for us. They're a very good team, and playing them here, it's very difficult. To bring this trophy back to Seattle for the fans who deserve it and the whole city of Seattle. For me, it's unreal growing up here and being around the Seattle sports, you know, teams and following them and always wanting to be on this team and then to come and bring a championship back to be part of that team. It's hard to put into words.
Hard to put into words, Jordan Morris, who was named Major League Soccer's Rookie of the Year for 2016. Jordan also plays for the U.S. men's national soccer team. I think Bruce Arena is hoping Jordan will score a few goals for the team as it tries to qualify for Russia 2018. Toronto FC, the opponent of the Sounders in that MLS Cup final. Also a first-time aspect to them.
Well, Toronto was the first Canadian team to get into the MLS Cup, and it was on the one side of the bracket, it was Toronto versus Montreal, so the one of those teams was guaranteed to get in, so that was pretty cool to see that international aspect to MLS.
Let's move to the national football team level now, Dan. I mentioned Portugal ending the year at number 8 in the world. First-timers, too, the Portuguese.
Yeah, the European soccer tournament really bridged the gap between the end of some of these professional seasons and the Olympics. We got to see the Copa America in the U.S., and around the same time was the Euro 2016 tournament. One of the things that I loved about that tournament was that the field was slightly expanded and included teams like Iceland and Northern Ireland, some of these that are not, don't include huge international stars. And going into the tournament, Iceland was the 34th ranked team in the world. Everybody expected them to go out in the qualifying round, and they managed to knock off England in their first elimination game. They said that some huge percentage of the population of Iceland was actually in France this summer, not at home in Iceland, because the team attracted so many fans and it's such a small country. That was a lot of fun. But ultimately, Portugal won its first ever major championship by defeating France in the Euro 2016 final.
One of the happiest players on the Portuguese, who really didn't play much in that final, Cristiano Ronaldo. I said earlier in the week that his cup runneth over in 2016. He won the UEFA Champions League with Real Madrid, and he described the Euro 2016 Cup, Dan, as probably the most special cup he won this year.
Well, all of these players that are considered the number one or number two players in their sport need to have that validation. Did you do something bigger than just being a great individual performer? Did you win a championship in the world or for your club team? And Ronaldo was able to check off a couple of those boxes in his career. His Spanish league rival, Lionel Messi, said that he was going to retire from the Argentinian team after Argentina lost to Chile in the finals of the Copa America tournament. It looks like he's probably going to come back for another shot.
Yes.
But, you know, the playing for the country is a big deal for these guys. They make millions and millions of dollars playing for their club teams, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Chelsea, whoever. But they do feel some patriotism and want to win something for their country.
Dan, you mentioned that word validation, and one big star who's was validated in 2016 in the National Basketball Association, LeBron James. He brought the NBA title home to Cleveland, first NBA title for the Cavaliers. Prior to that, LeBron won two NBA titles with the Miami Heat, but let's listen to what he had to say about coming home to Cleveland and the Cavs winning their first NBA title.
I came back for a reason. I came back to bring a championship to our city. I knew what I was capable of doing. I knew what I learned in the last couple of years that I was gone. And when I came back, I knew I had the right ingredients and the right blueprint to help this franchise get back to a place that we've never been. And right now, it's just excitement. You know, it's not even relief. It's just excitement for us as a team, as a franchise, as a city, as a community, to be able to continue to build up our city, continue to be an inspiration to our city. It means everything, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
LeBron James, the superstar for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dan, as a proud Clevelander, did LeBron's star rise even higher after the Cavs won the championship?
Well, this is another example of bringing something home. LeBron from Northeastern Ohio in Akron was seen as the new hope for the city of Cleveland, winning one of these major pro championships in the U.S. They had had 52 years since they won a big title, which was the Cleveland Browns winning the NFL title. And everybody saw LeBron. I mean, people knew LeBron as a teenager in Ohio, as he was going to be this huge star. Things worked out that Cleveland was able to draft him as the number one pick in that year's draft. And he was a great player, but he really didn't have the complementary pieces. They made it to the finals once and lost badly to the San Antonio Spurs. LeBron left and he went to Miami to kind of build this super team. He won two championships there. But back home, he had a lot of critics saying, why did you leave? Why did you do this to us? You betrayed us. I can't believe it. And then finally, when he decided to come back to Cleveland and win after one season where they made it to the finals and then lost, the next year coming back and winning was a big deal. And it was reflected in the huge parade that they had in Cleveland. Millions of people came to Cleveland for this. The city of Cleveland grew in population by that day significantly, just because all the people who had left Cleveland came back home to celebrate with the team. And now LeBron has redeemed himself for sure.
Cleveland almost able to celebrate another big title in 2016 in Major League Baseball. The Cleveland Indians went up against the Chicago Cubs. Another first-timer element, Dan. Talk about that.
Yeah, that was a great World Series for people from the two fan bases that have been long suffering. And the last time Cleveland won the World Series, 1948. The last time Chicago won the World Series, 1908. One of those teams is finally going to break through. The majority of the country, I think, was supporting the Chicago Cubs, the long, long, long time losers with all of these horrible moments in their history, ground balls going under fielders' legs and a fan reaching out and interfering with the play that they thought could have gotten them to the World Series, that sort of thing. But in Cleveland, the fans were just waiting to celebrate again. They had gotten a taste of it 4 months earlier with the Cavs celebration.
That's right.
And then the exciting thing was Cleveland got ahead 3-1. And you have to think, well, it's a 7-game series. You're ahead 3-1. All you have to do is win one game out of the next three. And the Cleveland Indians couldn't do it. They made a big comeback in game 7, even though they were down early to Chicago. But Chicago rallied in extra innings and won the game. As a long-suffering Cleveland sports fan, I can respect the fact that all of these fans in Chicago finally got to feel that jubilation that I got a chance to feel when the Cavs won. So even though I wish the Cleveland Indians had been able to pull it off, I give a lot of credit to Chicago. It's okay with me.
Dan, you mentioned what a great World Series it was. Personally, where do you think it rates in the history of Major League Baseball?
Well, they talk about this recency bias. Things that happened yesterday or in the last year are the things that we remember the most, and we tend to say are the greatest moment in whatever sports history. But it's got to go down there. The reason it's magnified is Game 7. It's a 7-game series. You've got to win 4 games out of at least 7. Sometimes you can win the World Series 4-0. Game 7... The regulation baseball game is 9 innings. This game went to the 10th inning. It was tied. So it kind of was like the old faithful geyser boiling, reaching this point where something had to give and one of these cities was going to explode with the celebration. So all of those things together made it one of the best World Series games that I've seen.
Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. And Dan, I know you have a story coming out this week on sports highlights for 2016.
Right. So if any of our listeners want to look back on the sports year that was, they can go to VOA's Learning English website, listen to the audio as well, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Thank you, Dan. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty seasonal greetings, Andrew.
Sporty seasonal greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
You don't have your red on today, Andrew, but we're not quite to Christmas yet.
No, I've got a maroon kind of tie, so a little bit of not quite to Christmas, but I'll have the nice Christmas red on tomorrow.
What is trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, let's start with a story we talked about yesterday. Petra Kvitova, of course, the 2-time Wimbledon champion, had a home invasion where she was attacked and her hand got cut up pretty badly. And an update on that, they've released a statement on social media from her team that she went through surgery and is recovering, but it's going to be at least 3 months before she can even pick up a tennis racket, let alone swing it, and 6 months, they say, before she can return to the court. So it looks like much of her season this year is going to be done. Even when she gets back to the court, it's going to be a question of how quickly she can train and get back into fit playing shape. So we'll see as she recovers how quickly that progresses. But we are getting more, word from the tennis world wishing her well, including Rafael Nadal, who tweeted out on his Twitter account that it was terrible news, wishing her a speedy recovery. Keep smiling as always. So we certainly hope that for her.
Best wishes to Petra Kvitova. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, we have a big birthday this week, actually yesterday, because on December 21st, 1891, James Naismith first posted his rules for a game he invented called basketball. So it's 125th anniversary of the first basketball rules being posted at that gym in Springfield, Massachusetts. So a lot of well wishes for the game of basketball that is celebrating 125 years. Springfield, Massachusetts is where the Basketball Hall of Fame is. So that's one fun fact about this. Another is that James Naismith was Canadian, but he actually came to the U.S. to invent basketball. And then after he invented the game, became the first head coach of the Kansas University men's basketball team.
Your beloved Jayhawks.
The Jayhawks, yes. So he was the first coach. So a lot of basketball history in Kansas. In fact, 6 years ago, a KU alum paid quite a lot of money to get those first written, handwritten 13 original rules to display them at the University of Kansas. Guess how much he paid, and this is 6 years ago, I'll just say it's a lot of money. This alum must be doing really well if he could pay this much.
I have no idea.
$4.3 million.
Wow.
To get the rules so they could display them there. So quite a nice gift to the University of Kansas so they can display those rules there. But it's interesting looking back at those 13 rules, how many of them have remained the same. There are things, you know, the ball may be thrown in any direction with one or both hands. Some of the rules on fouls, some of them are kind of fallen by the wayside. For example, the time shall be 2 15-minute halves with 5 minutes rest between. I think NBA games are just a little bit longer than that now.
That's right.
But this one is interesting. This one has stayed around. It's been modified a little bit, but it's one of the key tenets of the basketball. No shouldering, holding, striking, pushing, or tripping in any way of any opponent. Now that brings us to our next trending story. Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen is a basketball player, a college basketball player with the Duke Blue Devils, Duke University, and he has become known for tripping opponents. This is something he's done on several occasions. There's video evidence on social media, and he did this last night in a game against Elon University, and when he received a technical foul for doing this, he kind of had this huge tantrum on the sidelines. He was throwing his head around, thrashing his arms around. And so he's become, as a result of this tripping and as a result of this tantrum, some people are saying on social media, the most vilified or most hated player in college basketball right now. People saying things that he is the Draymond Green of college basketball. Of course, Draymond Green has his own issues with his interactions with players, yes. People saying that Grayson Allen is a spoiled child, saying that Duke has to send... It's like he's got sent to his room with no dessert and he's throwing a tantrum. So not a lot of love for Grayson Allen after this tantrum incident. And head coach Mike Krzyzewski just a few hours ago announced that this was unacceptable and inexcusable and that he is suspended indefinitely. So he is out of the team for the time being until he can get his behavior under control. So this is making big waves in the college basketball world. As we remember about 30 years ago, it was another Duke player, Christian Laettner, who was often described as the most hated college basketball player. So not a great tradition for Duke having these guys on the team, but getting a lot of attention for Grayson Allen for all the wrong reasons.
You mentioned James Naismith, the founder of basketball, in the Hall of Fame. Mike Krzyzewski already in the Hall of Fame. As a coach, one of the most well-respected coaches in basketball. So he's got, I think he needed to take some disciplinary action, Andrew.
Yeah, and I think coming from someone as revered as Mike Krzyzewski, it shows that this is a real issue and that he's the kind of coach that is so successful and so kind of legendary in the game that he knows what's best for his team and he knows that this behavior isn't acceptable. So I don't think Grayson Allen's going to be in the Hall of Fame anytime soon. Maybe if he can turn his behavior around, it could be a nice comeback story. Everybody loves a comeback story, but we'll see. First, he's got to get those tantrums and the tripping under control.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the December 22nd holiday edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United Nations officials, including Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, are warning of possible genocide in South Sudan as terrible violence rages there. The Secretary General is urging the Security Council to impose an arms embargo on the country to remove the tools to escalate violence, a position the United States supports, in addition to establishing targeted sanctions on individuals responsible for some of the worst atrocities in the conflict. South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan in 2011. In 2013, a civil war broke out, and the country descended into sectarian violence when forces loyal to President Salva Kiir, a member of the Dinka ethnic community, began to fight those who supported former Vice President Riek Machar, an ethnic Nuer. A peace accord was signed in 2015, but the fighting has continued, leading to a humanitarian disaster with widespread displacement and food insecurity, as well as pervasive human rights abuses, including the systematic use of sexual violence as a weapon of war. In a statement, U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said that both the government and the opposition are responsible for the horrific violence that has brought so much suffering to innocent civilians. He pointed to the recent mobilization of 4,000 government-affiliated militia in central Equatoria and to repeated calls from opposition leaders to overthrow the government and attack the capital. Both the government and opposition, Mr. Kirby said, continue to obstruct humanitarian access and impede the operation of the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS. And despite pledges to do so, the government has not taken sufficient steps to allow deployment of an UNMISS regional protection force to provide stability and security in Juba. Mr. Kirby took note of President Kiir's December 14th call for a national dialogue and called on both sides to create the conditions that would be required for such a dialogue to proceed. This means that both sides must cease violence against civilians, support humanitarian access, and respect the ceasefire. Mr. Kirby urged the swift adoption by the UN Security Council of an arms embargo and targeted sanctions against those who have undermined peace and stability and created the conditions for mass civilian atrocities. As we and our partners in the international community continue to pursue these measures, we will support those engaging in a peaceful and inclusive dialogue as a means to resolve the current crisis and work toward the peaceful future that the people of South Sudan deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOA. Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll have an encore showing of our program looking at the legacy of U.S. President Barack Obama. Join guest host Esther Githui Ewart and her panel as they examine President Obama's two terms as the U.S. Commander-in-Chief. The legacy of President Barack Obama on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.